This is KMBA News. I'm Trip Krause. In Alaska, repatriations can range from as small as an individual bone or skull to up to hundreds of sets of remains. We talk with experts about how colonization's dark history has complicated repatriation efforts. Between 1910 and 1941, Czech anthropologist Alice Herdlicka curated the U.S. Museum of Natural History. In the 1930s, he removed remains of more than 1,000 individuals and funerary objects from Larsen Bay and brought them to the Smithsonian Institute. In the early 1990s, the Smithsonian Institute returned many of those remains to the community. Here's former Larsen Bay resident and Aleutic Museum Executive Director April Lactonen Counselor.
It was the first time where our people really began to understand why it was so important to have control over our own cultural heritage and by extension our ancestral remains. It took years and lots of lawyers. This was before my time. I was a child.
That repatriation request process began in 1987, and hundreds of those ancestors were put to rest in 1991. The Smithsonian repatriation isn't covered under NAGPRA. Instead, the Smithsonian based its policy on a 1989 law that authorized the National Museum of the American Indian. One of the criticisms of the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act is that it puts a huge burden of proof on tribes who may not have access to the necessary records. On top of that, the people who took those remains or other objects didn't always keep the best records. See, Alaska Heritage Institute President Rosita Worrell received her master's and doctorate in anthropology from Harvard University. Worrell also worked in the Harvard Peabody Museum and served on and chaired a review committee that worked toward repatriation. She's also initiated several repatriation claims, including a repatriation of a totem pole taken from Southeast Alaska in 1899.
We even had a repatriation claim from there. We had a big ceremony. Took one of the Harriman, repatriated one of the Harriman expedition totem poles. It was from Saxman.
Worrell has sat on both sides of the repatriation table.
In my time on the NAGPRA review committee, you know, I was in meetings across the country. And it was just heartbreaking. And, you know, almost every meeting where we would have tribal members, you know, begging for the return of their ancestral remains, and in NAGPRA we do have this term called culturally unidentifiable human remains, according to the records they couldn't figure out where these ancestral remains came from, and so Native Americans across the country would be just pleading, you know, please return our ancestors.
Worrell says that tribes have to provide, quote, the preponderance of the evidence, end quote. Tribes have to prove a claim using geographical information, kinship, biological, and anthropological linguistics. Recently, repatriation committees began accepting oral traditions.
But I will tell you that initiating a repatriation claim is quite expensive. And especially if it should rise to a dispute.
Worrell had to recuse herself when the NAGPRA review committee on which she served had to handle two disputes. She says those disputes cost more than $100,000.
But a repatriation claim, it requires significant research because you have to prove with the documentation. You can't just say, this is my grandfather's clan hat. You have to prove through all the documentation that it belongs to, you know, a clan. Okay, so it's really imbalanced.
And she says museums aren't always forthright with sharing documentation. Sometimes remains and objects are collected by federal and state agencies and then turned over to a university or museum. One of those repatriation priorities for the Aleutic Museum was the return of ancestral remains from Chirikoff Island, which is about 100 miles southwest of Kodiak. Aleutic Museum Executive Director April Lactonen Counselor is a tribal member of the Shunak tribe of Kodiak. She says many of the remains were from a Russian Orthodox graveyard that eroded into the beach. Shirokov Island was managed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Following the excavation in the 1960s, the remains were taken to the University of Wisconsin.
The initial collection was done as a salvage operation, but then as many things were done in the 1960s between archaeologists at universities, they were kind of shipped around and traded around with no surviving documentation. And ended up at Indiana University at Bloomington, which was not incredibly cooperative.
Counselor says the Aleutic Museum sought the release of those ancestral remains for about 15 years before the Department of Interior's legal division became involved.
And it was a difficult thing to be there for the final part of that struggle to get those ancestors returned because we felt like we weren't being heard. The archaeologist who had possession of the remains seemed to feel that it was their life's work or have some sort of ownership over the story of them. We asked for copies of all of the research documentation on the remains and the catalog, which we knew they had, and they refused.
That's when the Army Corps of Engineers performed another cataloging of the collection. Even the Bishop of the Russian Orthodox Church of America got involved. He sent a letter of support asking for the return of the remains so they could be reburied and for the records to be released.
But that whole situation made me, as a tribal member, feel you know, a little bit traumatized because we see these people as our ancestors. We also had done research into the Russian Orthodox Church records and found the names of people who had been buried in that graveyard in the 1800s. Some of them had living descendants.
Counselor says the repatriation process can begin a couple of ways.
Sometimes we get notified by an organization or a museum or a university that they're putting something into the Federal Register. Sometimes we get contacted by our local tribes for assistance. And in some cases, it's because they don't really know exactly how to go through that entire process.
The Aleutic Museum isn't a tribal organization. It's tribally run and tribally led, but it doesn't have the tribal standing to directly negotiate repatriation claims, unless they're doing so on behalf of a tribe. But the museum does keep up to date on potential notices. Here's Aleutic Museum's collections curator, Amanda Lancaster.
You know, since NAGPRA was implemented, museums are required to send out summaries and inventories. And so you can go on the NAGPRA website and look through their databases and, you know, search by state. You can search by museum or institution. So, you know, as part of a project we're working on right now, I've been looking through those notices and finding some that we weren't even aware of.
Repatriation claims in Alaska can be tricky. That's because some tribes recognize dual enrollment, meaning a person can belong to two tribes at once, usually a local tribe and a more umbrella tribe, but not all tribes recognize dual enrollment. That's where Shunack tribe comes in handy and makes it easier to negotiate claims. When remains can't be specifically pinned down to a particular community or village, then an umbrella tribe like Shunack can initiate a claim for the region. The tribe is also based in Kodiak, along with the Aleutic Museum. The NAGPRA registry is available to search online, but that doesn't make it less problematic. Shannon O'Loughlin is the executive director of the Association of American Indian Affairs. She says items can be categorized in a way that creates uncertainty of which tribe or tribes to reach out to.
One of my criticisms of the law is the way it's written is for summaries that the institution does not have to consult with tribes to determine what is going to be in its summary. That means before consultation, it's determining what it thinks are sacred objects, objects of cultural patrimony, right? And associated funerary objects. So then it makes its summary and then it says, here tribes, now let's consult over the summary I unilaterally created naming which objects should be on the summary. So that's problematic if an institution didn't want to be transparent about what it held and whether or not it thinks it has the information to name an object as one type of item or another.
On the NAGPRA registry, the Harvard Peabody Museum lists at least one instance in this collection of culturally unaffiliated remains coming from the Aleutians West region. in Alaska. Remains are located at the Medical Examiner's Office, the Museum of the North on the University of Alaska Fairbanks campus, and other locations. But remains from Alaska are spread out from California to Connecticut. NAGPRA and most U.S. laws don't cover the remains that came from outside of what are now colonially imposed borders. Nor do those laws cover remains and objects that were taken from the U.S. and moved internationally. Here's Aleutic Museum Executive Director April Lechtonen-Counselor.
The museums outside of the United States that may or may not have ancestral remains from our area are not subject to United States laws.
The law also doesn't require museums or universities to return items for repatriation in any specific way. So remains of ancestors may be returned in a box, and in some cases, boxes separated into similar parts. A community may get a box of skulls, a box of femurs, etc. One example, Counselor says, was during the Chirikoff repatriation.
You know, when people get the remains back, they're not coming back in coffins. They're not coming back in the way that we are accustomed in the modern day to see our dead be treated. And I think that helped the broader community that knew about the situation. It helped them to understand, you know, you wouldn't like to see your family member come back in individual cardboard boxes.
And so communities try to give their elders and ancestors rest in the most respectful way possible. For Kodiak, the Aleutic Museum worked with the city and local tribes and native corporations to create Ancestors Memorial Park. Museum Director Counselor says it's less about internment and more about an honoring place. Some Native communities don't allow practices to handle ancestral remains, and so sometimes elect to allow a museum to store them in the meantime. It's complicated, says Harvard professor Phil Deloria, who chairs the Peabody Museum NAGPRA Advisory Committee.
So it's all complicated, as it always is. There are certain things which are under control of the federal government, which are in our collections, and many things have been repatriated. Some human remains remain in our collection at the request of the discretion of tribes who have completed the process with us. And then there have been an interesting number of cultural objects, in which there has been exchange.
Almost 100 years after a Tekwede'e totem pole from Southeast Alaska was removed, the Harvard Peabody Museum helped repatriate it. The Cape Fox Corporation donated a cedar tree as a gesture of appreciation, and the museum commissioned Tlingit master carver Nathan Jackson to carve the tree into a pole as a symbol of the Tsanyaquan Tekwede'e clan and history, but also the relationship between the Tsanyaquan and the Harvard Peabody Museum.
And you know, when I take my students in to the museum, and a lot of Native students, it's an uneasy experience, for those students. We stop at the Nathan Jackson pole, though, and talk quite a bit about what collaboration, means and the ways in which can be really productive, for everybody who's involved. And, NAGPRA is always hard. There's no doubt about it. But it feels to me like things have gone well with Alaska in the past, and we look forward to doing more, in the future.
Repatriation hasn't always been a collaborative process, but as more universities and museums examine colonization's dark history and its impact on the indigenous people, many make greater efforts to consult with tribes in an effort to bring ancestral remains home. For KMBA News, I'm Tripp Krause.